Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit Slack.com to get started.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, welcome to Weird House Cinema. This is Rob Lamb.
And I'm Joe McCormick, and today we're addressing the 1976 genre mashup film Devil's Express, also known as Gang Wars. Did you know about this alternate title, Rob?
Yeah. I'd run across some sort of alternate trailers for it. I guess you see this a lot with films that came out, especially back in the 1970s, where it comes out, maybe it doesn't play as well, or maybe something else happens in the zeitgeist and you want a second shot at it. So you just retitle it and put it out there again and see if you catch any viewers.
So the claim that I came across, maybe it's best to start with the elevator pitch. The elevator pitch here is that when an ancient Chinese demon is released into the subway tunnels of New York, a saintly master of the martial arts named Luke Curtis must summon all his courage to defeat the underground evil. So it is a martial arts demon horror movie. But it also has elements of like gang fighting in the streets. And according to a write-up by Code Red, which I think did the Blu-ray re-release of this movie, they said that when The Warriors was released theatrically, which I think would have been in 1979, mm-hmm. So 3 years after this movie came out, they say the distributor of Devil's Express retitled it Gang Wars, essentially to make it look like a Warriors-type movie. Of course, if you haven't seen The Warriors, that's just it's a movie about all these weird different little gangs in New York that have their own interesting costumes and quirks, and they're running around fighting each other and all that. And I think they wanted to cash in on that Warriors magic.
Yeah, I mean, The Warriors is a fabulously weird film in its own right. Because when we say weird gangs, we mean, if you haven't seen it, it's like there's a baseball gang. You
know, yeah, the Baseball Furies, that's right. Yeah. The first time I saw it, that was the funniest thing about it to me. They were wearing baseball uniforms, mm-hmm. and they have bats, I think.
Yeah, so it's like, it's as if it's set in an alternate reality where you just have a bunch of wacky gangs with all these wacky themes. So it's definitely worth checking out. Superior movie to what we're talking about here today, but the one we're talking about here today, Devil's Express, is just a wonderful mashup of different genres. They all kind of slam together awkwardly, scraping up against each other, sometimes jackknifing around each other in a way that is ultimately quite entertaining.
Yeah, so they retitled it Gang Wars, and there are gangs in this movie, and the gangs do fight, but this movie really has more to do with its star, Warhawk Tanzania, hunting down a demon to fight in the subway tunnels.
Yes. And, you know, we can introduce Warhawk Tanzania all day, and we are going to get into Warhawk Tanzania in a minute. But why don't we go ahead and listen to the trailer, the original TV trailer for the film, because you really need a narrator's voice to introduce Warhawk Tanzania to the world.
To take a ride on the Devil's Express. What happens when 2,000 years of evil strike a city? See Warhawk Tanzania match blows with the devil and those the devil has possessed.
Some deformed monster.
Take a ride on the Devil's Express. It may be your last stop. Rated R.
See, now aren't you completely on board with Warhawk Tanzania? Either the next big thing or the current big thing, based on the salesmanship in this particular trailer.
One thing about the trailer is the trailer really plays it up as a horror movie, I think. Mm-hmm. What do you think about that?
Would you agree? They definitely stress the monster movie aspects of this, which I think that's what brought me to it. I realized, oh, this is not just a New York City martial arts gang war movie. No, there's also some sort of a subway monster in it. There's a demon. And I'm a sucker for any film that puts monsters in a subway, especially the New York subway system. I'm just instantly enthralled.
Oh, of course, there. But stylistically, this film has a lot of things in common with a lot of these sort of crime exploitation movies of the 1970s. I've seen a lot of people online saying that it has elements similar to blaxploitation films, which are a genre that has a very complicated legacy. Of course, these were films that came out in the early 70s, especially. They're often said to have been inspired by a couple of seminal works. One was Melvin Van Peebles' Sweet Sweetback's Badass Song, which mm-hmm. I think came out in 1971. And another big one was Gordon Parks' movie Shaft. And it's debatable whether those should actually be thought of as blaxploitation movies themselves, but they certainly are thought to have inspired this genre of films that had sort of larger-than-life black heroes, but that also tended to deal with themes of crime and were often set in New York City and have this complicated legacy because on one hand, they had these larger-than-life black heroes. I've read about some scholars talking about how, you know, finally you could have like a black hero on the level of James Bond, that kind of like superhumanness starring in a movie of his own. But then also like the term blaxploitation actually was coined by a member of the NAACP who was very against the genre, because basically I think he thought that it perpetuated negative stereotypes about the black communities in America.
Yeah, because these were often movies about crime, so that, you know, you had gangs in them. They would feature prostitution or drugs and violence, and if you're just watching these films of this genre, it makes you think like this is all there is. This is all there mm-hmm. is to black culture and to black life in America at the time. And in a similar way, of course, you also have kung fu exploitation films. And this is also a kung fu exploitation film where if you watch films of this caliber, you see basically Asian characters, Asian cultures, and certainly in this case, like Asian American life as being just martial arts. Like this is a movie that features several different Asian actors, or at least Asian stuntmen and Asian martial artists, but there's not a single Asian character of any depth. I do not know any of the Asian characters' names in this film. I don't know that they're given names.
Yeah, that's right. And of course, this movie would not be the only one that sort of mashed up the 70s martial arts exploitation style movie with blaxploitation aesthetics. Mm-hmm. These two things had collided in other films as well. But in this case, it also brings in horror, yes, which is a very interesting third element here.
Would you say it's the third rail? It's the third rail that drives the train?
You could say that. So, of course, this is a grimy 70s grindhouse film, but it also borders on one of our favorite genres that we've discussed before. Of course, this other genre we've talked about was the supernatural wrestling movie, such as the film starring El Santo, where the noble luchador hero must confront a mummy or a Dracula. The one we talked about on the show was Santo and the Treasure of Dracula, which was a really fun movie to talk about. Here, this is not exactly the same thing, but it's kind of close because this is essentially a supernatural martial arts movie. Like, Warhawk Tanzania must confront not just corrupt cops and rival gangs on the gritty streets of 1970s New York, but the denizens of hell itself.
Absolutely, yeah. And I mean, and it's ultimately, it's a Beowulf and Grendel story. You know, it's the story of the hero who must travel down into the depths, into the dark realm where the monster lives in order to defeat it. And you know, that's exactly what happens in this film. Speaking of which, is this our first martial arts film on Weird House Cinema? Have we done another pure martial arts film?
So many movies have elements of martial arts in them. I would find it hard to believe we haven't touched on anything there, but this might be the closest thing to a pure martial arts movie, yeah.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and talk about the people who made this possible. There's several fun connections in this film. At first glance, it might look like a... you know, one of these Z pictures from a casting standpoint where nobody goes on to do anything else or has any kind of interesting connections to the rest of the world. But that is not the case. Let's start at the top with the director and also one of the screenwriters, Barry Rosen, born 1946. He only directed a couple of pictures, but he was a producer on the 1975 film Black Force, where he apparently met some of the stars of that he would utilize in Devil's Express. And as a producer, he went on to work on some at least a couple of really fun projects, including Highway to Hell in 1991. He was a line producer on that. This is the wonderful Hell Cop movie starring Patrick Bergen and the entire Stiller family. Like, Ben Stiller's in it. Ben Stiller's mom is in it. Ben Stiller's dad is in it.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, weird. Oh, it's so weird.
It is a weird film. Gilbert Gottfried shows up playing Hitler because it's hell. There's all these bizarre elements in it. So that's definitely, I haven't seen it in a while, but that was one I fondly remember catching on like USA Network back in the day.
Okay.
And then Rosen also produced 22 episodes of Highlander, the series. So kudos on that.
I can just see him sending the dailies back being like, no, got to have more juice in these quickening scenes.
Now, I mentioned that Rosen was one of the writers on Devil's Express. There are four other screenwriters that are credited. So this is basically Rosen et al. I'll list their names quickly here, but they didn't really, I don't think any of them really went on to do much else. But still, the people that made this possible, Nicky Patton, Pascal Vaquer, Ciotis Robinson, and Bobby Saperstein. These are the screenwriters.
Okay.
Moving on, though, let's get to the main event here. Let's get to our star, the man who in this plays Luke, but it's hard to imagine anybody with a name like this just playing someone with a name like Luke. But we're talking about Warhawk Tanzania.
You know, I read some reviews saying, like, sort of deriding the film for trying to rely on the what they claimed was non-existent star power of Warhawk Tanzania. But yeah. I kind of disagree. I mean, Warhawk Tanzania is clearly not a super experienced actor, but I do kind of think he has star power.
Yeah, I think he absolutely has star power. I mean, he has the looks. He has this really righteous Afro hairstyle. He's got this cool mustache. He's lean. He's mean. He can throw some kicks and punches. And yes, he only has, I think, two different delivery styles for his dialogue, but you feel it when he delivers those lines. Like, he's still connecting with you.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, the thing about the trailer, especially, or a couple of the trailers that I watched for this, is that they really do sell Warhawk Tanzania as if he is either the current big thing or the mm-hmm. next big thing in martial arts cinema. Like, he is exploding. The Warhawk Tanzania train is about to leave the station. Are you going to get on board?
Yes, I'm on board. Yes, I have my tickets right here. First class.
Because, I mean, if nothing else, it's also just an amazing name, Warhawk Tanzania, just undeniably cool. And we see that in his character, too. Like, I feel, we call him Luke, but I feel like the character is Warhawk Tanzania as well. I should also stress, Warhawk Tanzania, had one, I think one film credit prior to this and no film credits after this. He was in that 1975 exploitation film Black Force that I mentioned earlier that came before this. And then he just does not appear in anything else. And I don't think anything is really publicly known about the man. I would say that it probably went one of two ways, though. Either after this film, he just decided that he was just going to live a private life and be a private citizen. And if so, you know, more power to him.
Or sure, great.
Warhawk Tanzania has spent the decades since this movie battling actual demons and monsters around the world, taking the fight to the forces of evil as only Warhawk Tanzania can.
He is a martial arts exorcist of your mass transit systems.
Yes. He's a fighter. He's a lover. He's a demon hunter. He's a peace broker. He brings it all to the table.
Totally agree.
And believe it or not, there are other actors in this film. I mean, it seems like maybe they at first they thought, well, we'll just cast Warhawk. We don't need anybody else. Warhawk Tanzania is enough to fill up an entire film. But then they realize, well, we have to cast all these other roles too.
Uh-huh. Well, I don't know if I know anybody's name except Rodan.
Well, first there's a let's go ahead and hit Rodan, because Rodan's his buddy. Okay. Rodan's his companion. They're on the same course. They're on the, you know, they seem to have the same mission in life, but it becomes clear, as we'll discuss, that they do have different agendas going on. There's some conflict between them.
Oh, yeah, there's totally conflict between. I mean, so Rodan is Luke's student in the movie, his student of martial arts, because Luke is a martial arts master. But whereas Luke is, you could argue, pretty much lawful good, you know, he's in many ways sort of a paladin, or presented as such, viewed as such by the creators of the film. Rodan, I would say, is more in the sort of chaotic neutral territory.
Yeah. He's, you know, he'll be good, especially if he's there with Luke. If, you know, he has that Warhawk energy keeping him in line. But if he's off on his own, you know, he's running games all over town, as we find out.
Right.
Now, Rodan is played by the actor and martial artist Wilfredo Roldan, who lived, I think, 1951 through 2020. So he did pass away last year. Lower East Side resident and apparently like regional, at least regional martial arts legend. He was born in Puerto Rico and he moved to the continental United States at a young age. His acting career seems to have consisted of two different periods. He did some exploitation films when he was very young, including this one, and then some other film work later in his life after he retired from a career as a PE teacher for the New York City Board of Education.
Hmm.
He, you can look him up there. There are websites about him and memorials to him. He apparently sang. He was a much beloved master, I think a grandmaster of a particular system of martial arts that he did not, I don't think he did not found this school of martial arts. It was founded by a guy by the name of Frank Ruiz. But yeah, he was an accomplished martial artist and like sort of a regional celebrity. You know, you'd hear talk about like New York City people, you know, the sort of characters that that fill up the city that might not necessarily be known by people who are not themselves New Yorkers. Well, it seems like Wilfredo was one of those individuals.
Uh-huh.
And he's pretty good in this movie. You see him throwing some amazing kicks, and he's not bad as an actor. I feel like he's got a sort of a natural charisma as well, but also a kind of something you don't trust about him. He's got a meanness to him. And of course, that comes out in the character as well. Now, there's another martial artist, at least partial martial artist character that shows up early on, and that's a cop character by the name of Chris. And Chris was played by Larry Fleischman. This is another, like Warhawk, age unknown. Don't know when this guy was born. Presumably still alive. British-born actor. He popped up in 1971's Johnny Got His Gun. He was on All My Children, Law and Order, a couple of video games. And he's perfectly fine in this. Now, another a really interesting and weird actor that shows up in this film. Not very much. Like, he basically shows up for two scenes, almost as if he wandered into the shot and they decided to pay him. But a wonderful actor that many people probably know by his stage name, his performance name, talking about Brother Theodore.
Oh, his scene in this movie was one of the best parts of the whole thing.
Yeah. I think, is it two scenes? Is he also, is there a scene where he's looking at a dead body in a subway with some police officers for
oh
no real reason?
If so, I missed it. I don't recall that one. I remember the one where he's preaching to the crowd, and we'll get to that later.
Yeah, he mainly just has a ranting scene. So, yeah, Brother Theodore, also known as Theodore Gottlieb, he was born in 1906, died in 2001. And I've read that he improvised all of his lines in this as well. He was a German-American actor who performed a kind of stream-of-consciousness stand-up, and he has a fascinating life. I was reading the New York Times obit for him by Douglas Martin, and the whole thing's worth reading, fascinating character, but I want to read just these two snippets from it. Quote, "Born to great wealth in Germany, he ended up in Dachau, only to be released when he signed over the family's great fortune for a single mark. Einstein, said by some of Mr. Gottlieb's friends to have been his mother's lover, helped him get to the United States." And then we also hear, what? "Always an aristocrat, he suddenly found himself working as a janitor at Stanford University, where he managed to defeat 30 professors at chess simultaneously." So
I don't know. Okay. I don't know anything about this guy, so I admit I'm coming from a place of ignorance, but I feel incredulous at reading these sentences.
The 30, I mean, also knowing that he is very much a performer and kind of a professional weirdo. I mean, I don't doubt him on the core backstory here, but the chess thing raises my suspicion. Maybe he really was a brilliant chess player and would just, you know, wiped up the mat with a bunch of Stanford University professors. But I don't know. Either way, I like the myth building, though, because he seems, this is one of those weird characters you see show up in some stuff. And it seems like it's hard to tell where the mythology ends and the real life begins with him. But anyway, he ended up in the United States. He eventually got into acting and comedy. He had a small part in Orson Welles' The Stranger in 1946, which was his first role. And many of our listeners probably know him from his final picture. He shows up in 1989's The Burbs. Do you remember The Burbs, Joe?
Is that the one with Tom Hanks? Yep. I'm not sure that I've seen it.
It's one I saw when I was a kid, so I haven't seen it as an adult, but you have a number of weird character actors playing weird neighbors in that. I think Bruce Dern is in it as well. A couple other people that, you know, viewers would recognize. But Brother Theodore is in it playing one of the neighborhood weirdos. And he's pretty good.
I'm sorry. Does it have vampires?
I don't think it has vampires. I think it's just weirdos. Been a while since I've seen it. I don't remember what the payoff was. But there was a lot of like creepy goings on in like suburban basements.
I may be confusing The Burbs with The Money Pit.
Mm. Yeah, different movie, but very similar era, I think. Now, Brother Theodore has two excellent voice actor performances on his filmography from the animated films of Rankin and Bass. So he played, have you ever seen 1982's The Last Unicorn, Joe?
No, I haven't.
Okay, fabulous film, score by America. Wonderful vocal voice acting performances throughout. But Brother Theodore plays his character Rook, a hunchback who attends the witch Mommy Fortuna, who runs this sideshow of magical creatures and monsters. And so he's this really fun character. Not a huge character in the film, but a memorable one.
Okay.
Another character he played in the Rankin and Bass animated films, he voiced Gollum in 1977's The Hobbit and in 1980's The Return of the King. Both great roles, both great performances. I have to say I've fallen back in love with the original animated Hobbit in the last couple of years. And I think I can, without a doubt, say Brother Theodore is my Gollum.
Can you sing the songs?
No, I can't sing the songs, but it has good songs in it too. 1977's The Hobbit, also one movie. It's brilliant. They managed to fit that entire short book into one short film.
I don't think you could do it in less than 4 6-hour movies.
Yeah, somehow they did it, Rankin and Bass. Yeah.
Okay, who else we got in this?
All right, so we have the next one I want to mention because it's a weird credit on the cast for this. There's somebody that is referred to as Sikagi Tanzania, or as Tisagi Iron Priest Tanzania. And I'm not sure if that's supposed to be priest or if it's priest misspelled. Like maybe it's Sakaki Iron Priest Tanzania. I don't know. I don't know which character this is. I don't know why they also have the last name Tanzania. It's a total mystery to me.
It just adds to the allure of the film, though.
Yeah. We have an actor by the name of Aki Along in this, who plays a Chinese businessman. He was born in 1934, an Asian actor born in Trinidad and Tobago. He has a bit, this is a bit part, it's not really much to, but it's memorable, we'll get to it. But he has a number of parts in a lot of films over the years. He did some acting and directing. He was in two episodes of the original Outer Limits. He was on the As the World Turns, he was in V, General Hospital, Jake and the Fat Man, Babylon 5, and he was also in Dragon, the Bruce Lee Story.
Okay.
We have a character actor show up as well, and this is another one where I don't think he really does much in this film, but the actor Teddy Wilson. But he has some brief but memorable interactions, because he's one of these actors where, you know, Warhawk's great in this, but Warhawk doesn't have a lot of nuance to his performance. But Teddy Wilson, you can tell, like, this is a guy who gets some of the intricacies of acting in ways that the martial artists maybe do not.
It's always an interesting dynamic in martial arts films where the main cast is full of martial artists, people who you could say are martial artists first and actors second, and then they will often try to round it out just by filling in, like, great character actors to bring in that kind of personality and texture that's not always there in people whose first thing is martial arts.
Yeah, yeah. And so, yeah, Teddy Wilson definitely stands out. Talented actor. He lived 1943 through 1991. He played Sweet Daddy Williams on Good Times, and he did a lot of additional TV work, popping up on big TV shows from that era, including but not limited to, by any means, All in the Family, Sanford and Son, The Bionic Woman, The Jeffersons, the 1980s Twilight Zone series, L.A. Law, Alien Nation, Family Matters, and even Tales from the Crypt. He was in the episode Fitting Punishment. I don't know if you remember this one, but this had a it involved a black funeral home, and you had the wonderful actor Moses Gunn playing this tyrannical funeral director there, like being just like just really hard on his nephew.
No, I don't think I've seen it.
It's not like top shelf Tales from the Crypt, but it's pretty good. And Teddy Wilson shows up in it. But yeah, Teddy Wilson was in a bunch of stuff. He was in films by John Cassavetes, Blake Edwards, and he was in the 1980 Steve McQueen movie, The Hunter.
Mm.
All right, some other names of note, and also names that are barely worth noting. There's an actor by the name of Stephen DeFazio, who plays Sam, the lug-headed cop. A memorable character in the film, but this is his only film role. He's pretty fun as a lug-headed, conspiracy theory-spreading police officer.
Wait, is he supposed to be a lughead? I get that he's like the butt of jokes, but I thought the whole point was that he's kind of like Harley Stone's new partner. He's like I've got a criminology degree. He's, you know, bringing this kind of like smooth academic sensibility that's actually stupid.
I mean, maybe that's what they were going for. I got more lug-headed conspiracy theory spreader.
He is the guy who keeps saying that the murders caused by the demon in the subway tunnels are actually caused by mutant cats.
Yeah.
Okay.
But he's fun. And clearly, they ended up like ending on a note from him with the film. So they clearly liked the character once they got it on the screen.
Yeah.
All right. Uncredited, but Ron Bex is in this as a martial arts student. Uncredited in this picture, but he went on to direct, produce, and star in several low-budget movies. I think he's still making low-budget movies. Starring in pictures that he directed, opposite such names as one-time Bond, George Lazenby, and even Eric Roberts. And you know Eric Roberts won't just appear in anything. here's another one of note. Paul Glickmana was the director of photography on this. He was also cinematographer on some other famous 70s genre films, including The Stuff and God Told Me To. Now, as far as music goes on this film, I don't think it really has a score per se, but they do feature a number of different musical bits, and it features several tracks from a music group called Rising Sun. Like Son and Daughter, Rising Sun, which didn't mean anything to me until I started looking into it a little bit. And these songs were written by Harlem disco legend Patrick Adams. Now, if you haven't heard of Patrick Adams, you can be forgiven for that. Apparently, he's often forgotten or not recognized outside of the genre, but is very well respected within the disco genre and in DJ circles. There was a 2017 Guardian profile about him that described him as, quote, the underground disco super producer whom DJs still adore.
Oh, okay.
So even if you don't know the name Patrick Adams off the top of your head, you've probably heard some of the songs that he worked on. Some of these songs were prominently featured in other movies, including Touch Me All Night Long, performed by Fonda Rae and the band Wish from 1984, which was a minor hit on its own, but then it went on to be featured in A Nightmare on Elm Street 2, Freddy's Revenge.
Ah, I know that movie well.
Other tracks that he had a hand in include Dance, Dance, Dance by Martin Acuna, In the Bush by Musique, Keep on Jumpin' by Musique. That's also the name of the 1978 album. And you can look that up on Spotify. It's great stuff, just wonderful 70s disco vibe. Also, Till You Surrender by Rainbow Brown, and many others. So this ended up, at first I thought there wasn't going to be anything special with the music on this picture, but it turns out it was very special. So if you're not familiar with the work of Patrick Adams, look it up. You've heard it before, you just didn't realize you've heard it before. But yeah, he had his hand in so many great tracks, and I think he's still making music today.
I also really enjoyed the soundtrack on this, and one of the things I liked was the sudden transitions between like really great pulsing disco or funk music, immediately cutting to like throbbing deep sea sound effects when it was trying to get the demon in your mind.
Yeah.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like Eco Eye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Hey, it's me, Blippi, and this is my best friend, Mika.
Hi, I'm Mika, and this is our brand new podcast,
Blippi and Mika's Road Trip. The Blippi-mobile will take us to amazing places.
Click, click, put your seatbelts on, get ready for a ride, we're gonna have some fun.
We'll explore and listen to the sounds of awesome places like farms, racetracks, and even construction sites.
Follow your ears, what do you hear?
And we'll meet new friends along the way.
They'll teach us awesome new things about the places and things we see and hear.
What did we learn today?
Learning is so cool.
Listen to Blippi and Mika's Road Trip Podcasts on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, well, let's get the demon in mind on this episode. Let's jump into the plot of Devil's Express.
All righty. Well, the very first thing we see, we get a little title. It says, China, 200 BC.
Yeah.
Where in China?
Just somewhere in China, though It quickly becomes apparent that, any scene in this film that's supposed to take place in China is clearly still New York. Specifically, yeah. I think they shot this at Harriman State Park, Bear Mountain. So, yeah, it's very obviously not China, but it's supposed to be.
And, what do you think about the scene of the plane landing in Hong Kong? You think that was real stock footage?
I think it was real stock footage all the way.
Now, here at Harriman State Park in China, we have some monks who are disposing of some kind of fearful artifact. That's the first thing. You see them in a train, sort of not a train, like a locomotive. They are walking in a row carrying this big box, like a sarcophagus mm-hmm. almost, or like they're carrying the Ark of the Covenant.
Right.
And they are also they're being watched over by this kind of head priest guy. And they have in their possession a mirrored amulet. And they take this big box and the mirrored amulet deep into a cave in the forest. And they deposit the amulet in the box in the cave. And then I guess it's quitting time. And once it's quitting time, they are all beheaded. I think this is presumably so they take the secret of the amulet to the grave with them.
Yeah.
So their leader, after beheading each of them in a row, he cuts his own throat. And so one would assume that the secret evil of whatever is in that box is now safe forever.
Or is it?
Well, yeah, they don't count on meddling martial artists from the United States coming to China in the 20th century. Mm-hmm. One thing I like in this movie is that, at least in this opening scene, I think this was actually less true in some of the later scenes, but in this opening, it has some really way over the line sound effects. It's one of those things where somebody swings a sword and hits nothing, just swings it in the air, but it produces this extremely loud steel cable kind of sound.
Yes.
And then after that, we get to one of these great editing montages I was talking about earlier, which is really funny because it's cutting during the opening credits. It's cutting between a subway tunnel with these spooky, deep chirping sounds and no music. And then immediately back to crowded streets in New York City with feel good music at full volume. Mm-hmm. And then we meet our hero. We meet Warhawk Tanzania playing this guy named Luke Curtis. And Luke is teaching martial arts in his studio. He's sparring with this Christian Slatery kind of guy who is, we're to find out, is the police detective. And apparently there's a relationship where this guy is Luke's student and he keeps trying to recruit Luke to become a cop, I think. Is that how you understood
yep.
it?
Yeah. Yep.
By the way, some of the synopses you will find of this movie online say that Luke is a cop, and that is absolutely not correct. Luke is not a cop. He does not appreciate this guy's attempts to recruit him to be a cop. And he says, next time you try to recruit me to that pig pen of yours, I stop pulling my punches and ice you.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, not definitely not a cop. But that doesn't mean he can't train with a cop. I think one of the key messages of this film is that martial arts is a unifier, and it can
yes.
unify different gangs, different races, different cultures, and also it can unify you can even throw the police in there, and everybody could get along if they are practicing martial arts and sweating profusely.
If they're practicing martial arts with the right state of mind, that yes. seems to be Luke's ethos, that martial arts is not just about fighting. It also involves some kind of higher wisdom and an orientation toward peace.
Yes.
Now, Luke's student Rodan comes in, and again, this is the guy played by Wilfredo Roldan, and they start talking with the cop student here, and we find out that Luke and Rodan are about to travel to what Luke says is fabulous downtown Hong Kong, and then they're going to go for a week of self-improvement, which we find out later they're going to like a monastery of some kind to train to the level of perfection.
Yeah, like they've clearly, both Luke and Rodan are performing at such a high level. The only way they can improve is to go on journeys like this.
So after the student leaves, we sort of get a picture that Luke and Rodan are, I would say that it seems like they are adjacent to the criminal underworld. But Luke, at the same time, is a sort of do-gooder who fights for justice. Rodan, meanwhile, not so much. He comes yeah. off as mean, coarse, selfish, and short-sighted.
Yeah.
And so if Luke is somewhere in the lawful good zone, or at least neutral good, he's kind of a knight of the fist. Rodan is somewhere more like chaotic neutral. He will get into trouble.
Yeah, he's a rogue.
Yes, and we also learn from this interaction that, we learn that there are gangs, and they talk about the gangs, and we learn that they have disdain for cops and for the man. Mm-hmm. Now, they immediately go to Hong Kong. And in the Hong Kong segments, I wondered if in the version of the movie you watched, was there some dialogue audio that was missing here? Like, there are parts where they arrive and the master of this place speaks to them, speaks to our heroes, but he's got his back turned and I heard nothing.
Yeah, there were a couple of scenes in this where it made me wonder if they didn't get the sound quality they wanted, or they later decided that the actual dialogue was unnecessary or perhaps dumb. There's a later scene that I particularly remember where characters are having a prolonged conversation and there's nothing really visually interesting going on, but we have music playing over it. So it really felt like, well, maybe they didn't get the sound they needed on this particular scene, so they're just going to roll some fabulous disco music on top of it.
Yeah.
No complaints.
But Luke has complaints. Luke has complaints about Rodan's attitude, because at this monastery, it's clear that Luke is fully committed to attaining the highest level of martial arts mastery. He's on the ball. But Rodan, he is distracted. His head is elsewhere. His head is all clogged up with the lingering frustrations of New York and sort of stresses and maybe desires for vengeance. And so after he reaches the highest level of physical prowess, Luke has to bring his mind to the same level of transcendence, which they say is achieved by sending him off to meditate in a special place in the wilderness while his specially chosen favorite keeps guard over him. And he chooses Rodan, and that does not seem like a good choice. So while Luke is in a trance, achieving higher levels of spirituality, Rodan, being Rodan, wanders off and gets into trouble instead. And so what he does is he wanders into a cave, and oh no, it's a cave of forgotten demons. It's the cave from the beginning of the movie. And he finds a secret amulet, snatches it, runs off. And then it's pretty much back to New York.
Yeah, right back into it. They fly back and they've got business to take care of, and they're out to do it.
But we immediately see the evil that seeps from this ancient sarcophagus in the cave now that it's not being contained by the power of the amulet, because the removal of the amulet has, of course, released the monster from the cage. Mm-hmm. And we get a montage where the demon now travels to New York. I was wondering at first, like, wait, why does the demon travel to New York? But maybe he's after the amulet. Is that how you understood it?
I guess so. He must want the amulet. Like, maybe he thinks he can destroy the amulet. The film doesn't quite explain it, but it's what's happening.
But the demon travels by, so first he does appear to have like a bodily form. He's not just like a ghost, because you see he's got these hands with claws as he's crawling up out of the water. But then he possesses somebody and doesn't have a body anymore. He just possesses a guy's body, and it's this boat passenger.
Yeah, just a Chinese businessman who seems to be out doing his own thing. And now the demon is inside him, and now it is time for the demon to take this fleshly vessel, get on another vessel, and travel to New York as well.
Right. So maybe he picked this guy because this guy had a ticket to travel to New York by boat.
Yeah.
Which is, if you're traveling to New York by boat, that's a long trip.
Yeah.
Oh, but also when the man becomes possessed by the demon, the way they signal that is it gives him these huge, wild, white eyes with tiny pupils. It looks kind of to me like they cut out wedges of ping pong balls and taped them over the actor's eyes. Do you think that's what they're doing here?
It's either that, or they had him keep his eyes closed and they painted his lids white and put the black pupils on them. Both of these are ridiculous directions to go in, and it looks somewhat goofy, but also, I don't know, somewhat effective within the context of this particular film.
Yes. And so when the demon gets to New York, the guy immediately scrambles down into the subway tunnels. This is where his home is now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's where he will remain for the rest of the film. Now back with our characters like Luke and Rodan, we see Rodan getting into more and more trouble. He's getting mixed up with double dealings, with drugs, with money and gangs. And Rodan ends up with a thirst for vengeance after he is robbed by one of the Chinese gangs. Meanwhile, they talk about it, and Luke chides him for messing around with this low life stuff. He's very clear. Luke is like, this is not what martial arts is about.
Yeah.
And so the movie is projecting this sort of Jedi Sith vision of martial arts. You can be like you can be a good martial artist, or you can be a bad martial artist. And if you're bad, that's not real martial arts. It's no true Scotsman about martial arts.
Yeah, Luke is practicing martial arts almost just for itself. You know, he's practicing it because martial arts is like the path to enlightenment. Whereas Rodin, he sees it as a means of kicking butt and advancing in whatever criminal pursuit he's wandering into, petty vengeance, etc.
Right. Now, in the meantime, we get a demon transformation scene that I had high hopes for this. It was okay. It wasn't crazy good.
I thought it exceeded expectations.
Oh, okay.
It worked for me. I mean, it's poorly lit. It's in the subway, and his body just goes super gross and starts sort of crumbling and rotting, and he becomes this rotten, gooey skeleton man in the subways. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so he bleeds. He bleeds red blood, then he bleeds green blood, then he tears holes in his own torso, and then the transformation takes.
I wonder if the demon had higher hopes for New York City, you know?
Oh,
like he moved to New York in the form of a businessman. He thought he was going to ascend in the world. He was going to rise up. He was going to be living in one of those skyscrapers, making big deals.
Right.
But it just didn't work out that way. And instead, here he is, rotting in the subway.
He goes down into the tunnels. He's like, all right, ready for deals. And then he's looking around. He's like, where are the deals? He's trying to make deals with rats. He's trying to make deals with discarded, coffee cups. And it's not working out. So he's like, oh, to hell with this, and just transforms.
Yeah. He's like, I guess I'll just do more killings.
Now, here we get into a part of the movie where there are some street fight scenes where Rodin and his friends confront a rival gang in an alley. And this New York City street fight does involve swords, which is good choice.
Yeah, I mean, the swords, but also some just really impressive kicks. Like, I don't know that I would really hold this up as an example of great martial arts choreography, but it looks pretty good. There's some really high kicks. I mean, Roldan and Warhawk Tanzania, they can really do it.
Yeah. Now, at some point in the middle of the fight, the rival gang, they see that Rodin has this amulet. He's hanging on a necklace around his neck. And one of the guys sees that, and then they're just like, oh no, and they bolt. And I guess this suggests they are aware of its association with the indescribable evil that will turn your blood green.
Yeah, it seems to be the case. I also wonder if the demon's arrival in New York, if it has somehow had this effect on the surface world here. Like, there's more conflict because the demon is present, you know?
Oh, yeah. We're getting into a Viggo the Carpathian situation again.
Yeah, maybe it's kind of a Ghostbusters thing going on. Yeah.
It's making everybody mean, yeah. But here we reach the part of the movie where it's cop time. So remember the cop who was training with Luke earlier? Well, it seems like he is a grimy, chain-smoking detective. I think his first lines, or one of the first things he says when we meet him again later in the movie, is something about how he's like drowning in alimony payments. Mm-hmm. And what do you know? He's got a new partner. He has a new partner who, the guy you called a lughead, but I could be wrong, but I think the way you're supposed to read him is he is a nerdy, sort of by-the-book academic criminology type who doesn't know anything about the real world.
Yeah, okay. It could be the case. Okay.
But I got to say, Officer Christopher is no Harley Stone.
No.
But he does end up taking it too personal, though I guess not as personal as the ultimate hero of the film, who, of course, is Luke. But so they're called in to solve a murder. There has been a gruesome killing in the subway tunnels. They say, oh, it looks like he got caught in a meat grinder. And there's immediately a reporter on the case trying to pry details out of Christopher. And Christopher insists that he has a theory about who the killer is, which is not true at all. And he admits to his partner when the reporter leaves. But after this, we get a sense of the demon's MO because we watch him kill a guy. So there's a guy who wanders down into the subway tunnels wearing a plaid blazer. And then the demon, in a monotone voice, says, help me, it's dark in here, I'm stuck. And the guy in the plaid blazer is like, oh, someone needs help, and he wanders off into the tunnel to help them, and then munch.
Yeah, so we were learning that our demon here isn't just a monster that grabs people or a monster that possesses people. He's also a master of illusion, perhaps. A deceiver.
Though his illusions at the climax of the film are much better than the illusion here. This is just a monotone voice saying things in a way that sounds totally implausible, saying, help me, I am trapped. Later in the movie, he can fully transform into other people.
Yeah, yeah. Well, maybe he's still growing in power at this point. You know, he's still absorbing the energy of New York City and transforming it into his own evil.
Right. So immediately there is a second subway victim. The detectives are back on the case. The new partner is vomiting at the sight of the carnage on the tracks. But this was the part we were talking about with the conspiracy theories. The new partner, he's got something to share with the reporter, and it's this. Basically, all the animals that live in the sewers, including cats, rats, dogs, maybe alligators, have mutated and come up into the subway tunnels to attack and eat people. And this seems to be an obsession of this character's of Dr. Criminology here, because in multiple later scenes in the movie, he's explaining about how the sewers have alligators that are twice the size of normal alligators with fangs that'll chop a man's leg right off. And there are cats and dogs and rats that survive by cannibalism down there.
Yeah. And it's just, yeah, festered into this unnatural subworld environment. And that's what's eating people.
He's like regaling all the people hanging out at the bar where Luke and Rodan hang out with these theories later in the movie, and they seem quite entertained.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
Hey, it's me, Blippi, and this is my best friend, Mika.
Hi, I'm Mika, and this is our brand new podcast,
Blippi and Mika's Road Trip. The Blippi-mobile will take us to amazing places.
Click, click, put your seatbelts on, get ready for a ride. We're gonna have some fun.
We'll explore and listen to the sounds of awesome places like farms, racetracks, and even construction sites.
Follow your ears, what do you hear?
And we'll meet new friends along the way.
They'll teach us awesome new things about the places and things we see and hear.
What did we learn today?
Learning is so cool.
Listen to Blippi and Mika's Road Trip Podcasts on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, I will say the middle third of the movie does not have enough Warhawk Tanzania in it. It's mostly Rodan doing his gang fights and then the cops investigating murders.
Now, did we mention the long scene that just shows like a day in the life and love of Warhawk Tanzania's character, Luke?
Oh, we didn't, but it's very sweet. It's got a good soundtrack, and it's just showing him, I guess, with his wife, or I'm not quite sure who she was, his wife or his girlfriend. And it just shows them like eating together and hanging out, and it seems great. There's one scene where I think they're eating scrambled eggs with chopsticks.
Yes, they are. Yeah, that's great. So you can reflect on this sequence when you're stuck in the part of the movie where there's little to no Warhawk Tanzania.
Right, that's true. But eventually we get back on track when Detective Christopher concludes that the murders may have something to do with Luke's school. And when he approaches him about the idea and about working together, Luke does not want anything to do with it. Again, reestablishing this theme, this dynamic that Luke, from the movie's point of view, Luke is clearly lawful good, but he also wants nothing to do with the police. They're portrayed as a dirty, corrupt organization.
Yeah, yeah. There's at least one line there where the characters are concerned that the heat's going to come down and that the police are just going to come in indiscriminately with shotguns, you know?
Right, yeah.
So I think Luke has legitimate concerns here. He doesn't want any part of that world.
Right. So meanwhile, the subway monster maulings and the Rodan gang fights continue. These two plot lines converge when Rodan becomes outnumbered in a gang fight, runs down a subway tunnel to escape, and there the demon kills him by shoving his face into some kind of electrical panel, which fries him.
Yeah, I mean, Rodan's been really throwing down with some amazing kicks, you know, taking on multiple guys at once, but the monster just gets the drop on him and just fries his face. But it's a great sequence, though, because you see him, like, grab his throat, you see his face twist into this strange expression, and then later, when we see his corpse, we see, like, a like fried Rodan, like they did some sort of a crude but effective makeup job.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. They really do show him cooked. Mm-hmm. So when Luke sees this, he is enraged and he thinks it was the work of the Red Dragon Gang, and he goes on a martial arts rampage to meet their leader and find out what happened. So there's another street fight scene, this fight scene where he goes and he fights some of the members of the gang. The opponents are mostly wearing jeans and t-shirts, but I got to point out in this scene, Warhawk Tanzania is dressed awesomely. He's wearing these amazing, like, shiny gold pants with flared legs.
Yeah, yeah. Now, is this the costume that he also wears into the final fight?
Well, is this a different one? I was actually wondering about that. In the final fight, when he goes to confront the demon, he's not wearing a shirt. He's just wearing gold suspenders.
Yeah.
And they're the same kind of color as the ones in the scene, but they might be different. I'm not sure.
At any rate, he's always dressed fabulously. Like he goes into a fight knowing that he needs to, you know, he needs to hit hard physically, but also from a fashion standpoint.
So after he goes to fight the Red Dragons, they explain to him that they did not, in fact, kill Rodan, and they take Luke to a wise old man who will explain to him the truth about the amulet and the demon. And I don't know, it was hard to tell, but this wise old man either has some major makeup on his face or it's a person in a mask.
Yeah, and I was left wondering if this was, in fact, the mysterious Iron Priest Tanzania that we encounter. I'm not sure. But at any rate, yeah, this is the scene where the wise old man explains what's happening to our heroes and sets them on the course towards the defeat of evil.
So it goes like this. The old man says, 2,000 years ago, the sorcerer master Long Tan would allow some men to be possessed by demons, and these he would use to terrorize villages and cities. Master Chiang Dao produced the amulet in which he trapped the spirit of the demon, and this is the amulet your friend took. This monster is released into the world. As long as the amulet exists, the demon is deprived of most of his power. Even though he is still strong, he is unable to tolerate, and I think what he says here is light, but for the longest time I thought he said flight, and I was just baffled trying to understand this.
That's why I took the boat.
Yeah, but I mean, it made sense because he took the boat. He's unable to tolerate flight. And then he goes on to say, that is why your subways are a perfect place for him to hide. But he's got to mean light, right? I think that is what he says.
Yeah, yeah, can't tolerate the light. That's why he's in the subways. But all this with the amulet makes sense now. He followed the amulet to the United States because he wants to destroy the amulet. It's the only way that he can achieve his maximum power.
Uh-huh. And when he finishes the explanation, Luke reacts. He says, in my head, your story is fantastic, but in my heart, I know you're speaking the truth.
Yeah.
So I think we're also to understand that Luke has powerful intuitions, right?
He does. He did an intuition check on that story, and he nailed it.
Natural what kind 20. Of check is that? Is that insight? You roll insight, for wisdom, wisdom modifier?
Yeah. Yeah, that would be insight.
So we learn from the old man that the demon will stop at nothing to regain this amulet. By destroying it, he will be free forever, immortal and indestructible. Whoa. Luke immediately admits that he feels personally responsible for unleashing the demon on the world because he took Rodan with him on the trip, and Rodan was the one who stole the amulet. And so there's only one way to fix it. It's got to be a one-on-one showdown. Luke must defeat the demon in single combat. And if he loses, the demon will eat his soul. Do you think the demon ate the souls of the other people or just killed them?
It's a good question. Unless he's a fast eater, I think maybe he skipped on eating some of the souls. I don't know. But I'm not sure exactly how this demon consumes the souls. Maybe it's just an automatic effect that takes place whenever he murders somebody.
So Luke is warned that the demon is going to try to attack his mind, assuming the forms of those he loves most and those he fears most. He will use every trick in the book, the old man says. And he says that while Luke is fighting, he will help Luke, he says, I will place my mind with yours. Perhaps together we will be stronger than one.
Yeah, so we're setting up the ultimate battle here.
Yeah.
Good versus evil. Warhawk Tanzania against an ancient demon in New York City subway tunnels. This is what we've been working for. This is what the trailer promised us.
Right. And so the next scene is very funny. This is one we alluded to earlier. Mm-hmm. On one hand, you've got the foreground action, which is Luke is arguing with Officer Christopher that he has to go down into the subway and fight the demon, and Christopher disagrees. Meanwhile, right next to them, I think this is Theodore Gottlieb, right?
Yeah.
So he's out preaching a street sermon about how all your gods are dead and the rats are shrieking.
Yeah, it's pretty great because I think he's saying something like Jesus Christ is dead, Buddha is dead, and then he ends with something, I think he says, and I'm not feeling so great myself.
How did that connect to the thing about the rats shrieking?
I don't know. It's his presence in this film is so weird because it makes you wonder how it came together, how they got him for this, what they told him to do. Like, it totally works.
Seems improvised, yeah.
It does seem improvised, and it adds to just the overall weird. It seems right that there should be somebody in the film like ranting about what's going on below. Like it feels appropriately New York, you know? Like this is some well-injected New York weirdness into this motion picture.
That would be a good bumper sticker, though. All your gods are dead and the rats are shrieking.
The poetry of this movie.
Yeah. So I think while Christopher is distracted, Luke defies the police order, goes on down anyway, because, you know, he doesn't obey man's law. Yep. And he goes on down carrying the amulet. And the confrontation of the demon happens. And it's kind of like at the end of the first Mortal Kombat game, you know, where the boss is transforming into all the other fighters you fought along the way. Mm-hmm. So the demon takes the form of people he loves. So the demon appears in the form of his wife, in the form of the police, in the form of Rodan, and in the form of a train.
Oh, yeah, it is kind of like the battle with Shang Tsung at the end of the first Mortal Kombat. Creatures taking on all these forms, and I, depending on the shot, looks pretty good, I think, in some of these scenes. Like the monster costume, clearly this was not a Tom Savini joint here or anything, but you get it into an actual New York City subway tunnel, and I feel like your lighting limitations probably do some of the work for you.
Yeah, when we see him in full form, the demon is a kind of skull beast from the Black Lagoon. He has sort of a skull outside of his skull, would you say?
Yeah, he's kind of like, imagine a skeleton made entirely of cartilage that then is swollen with corruption and evil. Mm-hmm. You know, this very, nurglesome kind of body to him.
Yeah. Now, we'll leave it up to you to guess whether Warhawk Tanzania is victorious in defeating the demon or not. But one thing that happens after this is after the final fight, we, I think, go to the hospital. And mm-hmm. there in the hospital, there's a scene that I think is meant to convey a sort of like harmony has been achieved between the factions and gangs that had been angry at each other earlier.
It is such a sweet, dumb ending because, you have the police hanging out. You have Warhawk Tanzania. You got members of both gangs. Everybody has come together. The supernatural evil has been defeated, and everyone has been able to unify. Martial arts has brought people together, and it's going to be a new dawn in New York City.
I like it. And then over the end credits, you see the old man from earlier taking the amulet out to sea. He goes on a boat. I'm not sure what he's going to do with it. Is the implication that he'll like throw it in the ocean or something?
I thought maybe he was taking it back to China.
Oh, that would make sense. To put it back in the cave where it came from?
I guess. Hopefully hide it somewhere better. Otherwise, another Rodan's going to show up and just wander into the cave and make off with it.
That cave was way too close to the monastery.
Yeah. And sadly, we're not. I was hoping they would tell us at the end, Warhawk Tanzania will return in Warhawk Tanzania. You know, like I wanted more, the promise of more Warhawk Tanzania at the end, or that, you know, at least that Luke would be back. Sadly, it did not come to pass.
Don't be sad that it's over. Be glad that it happened.
Yeah, yeah. In a way, like the stars aligned perfectly on this. The interview that I read with Wilfredo, one of the things that he pointed out is that he was in some of these films and then he realized that it was just going to be a real struggle to make any money, to make a living doing this. And that's why he became a teacher, you know, both in the New York school system, but then also as a martial arts instructor. And so, you know, one imagines that that's probably something like that happened with Warhawk Tanzania as well. The man behind the myth, you know, moved on to something more mundane and maybe something more satisfying. Or again, Warhawk Tanzania continued the battle and is still battling today, fighting all the various demons in the world and their various subworld layers and protecting the surface world from absolute chaos.
Well, wherever he is, I hope he's doing great. if you're listening, email us.
Yeah. I mean, you know, no joking. He's terrific in this. I love Warhawk Tanzania. It really delivers in this film. All right, so you're probably wondering, well, where can I get some Warhawk Tanzania? Where can I watch Devil's Express? Well, I think the first place I saw this film, like where it first caught my attention, is that I saw it on Amazon Prime. I think it's still on Prime. You might have to like rent it through Prime, but the full film is also widely available on YouTube. You can find it on Tubi as well. And then also we mentioned the Blu-ray from Code Red. There's a Blu-ray of the film that's available. It's that it uses a 2016 2K scan of the original negative. So that's pretty cool.
Viewer discretion is advised.
Yes, definitely. Definitely. All right. Well, we're going to go ahead and close the book on this one. We're going to go ahead and restore the amulet to its subterranean crypt. But if you would like to listen to other episodes of Weird House Cinema, you will find them in the Stuff to Blow Your Mind podcast feed. We have Weird House Cinema on Fridays, but our normal science episodes, our core episodes are on Tuesdays and Thursdays, listener mail on Mondays, and an episode of The Artifact on Wednesdays. You can find the podcast feed wherever you get your podcast, but you can also go to stufftoblowyourmind.com. That will shoot you over to the iHeart listing for this page. And if you look around on that page, there's also a store button. And indeed, if you go to the store now, as of this recording, you can get a sticker or a magnet with the Weird House Cinema logo on it. And I hope very soon that there will be a t-shirt available as well. They're having to do something else with the logo file to make it work. But by the time this episode airs, maybe there'll be a shirt, but there at least will be a sticker or a magnet that you can get.
Huge thanks, as always, to our excellent audio producer, Seth Nicholas Johnson. If you would like to get in touch with us with feedback on this episode or any other, to suggest a topic for the future, or just to say hello, you can email us at contact@stufftoblowyourmind.com.
Stuff to Blow Your Mind is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta
right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars, because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.